I'm in a... Where are we?
We're in Battersea Park in London.
I'm back here again. I'm in another car park. It's not the same car park, I promise you, but in my company today is...
John Wire from Bowls & Wire.
And it's another episode of The Sideshow.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Sideshow Garden Podcast.
John, we have a checkered, funny history of meeting people and car parks isn't where I first... You just reminded me of there. Do you remember when we first met?
Yeah. It was in St Pancras Station I think I was having a cup of coffee and talking to Jamie Butterworth and you just rocked up.
I can't even remember why I was in St Pancras, but I remember they have a statue there which is of... I'm after forgetting the name, but I'm really sorry. But send me a note on Sideshow on Twitter or Facebook and I'll try and put it up. But it's of a woman with a man and she's got her hand around his neck and the left ankle is up. And I always thought, wow, that's fascinating. Any body who could hold another person like that and then put it into art. I'm veering off the point. We also know each other through another former guest of the show, not Jamie, but Max.
Yeah, Max Harriman, who works for us. He's a garden designer at Bowls & Wire. Very talented guy. And he was in the RHS Young Designer of the Year competition at Tatton. And I think you interviewed him. Is that right?
He was the only person from Tatton 2018 that I interviewed, funnily enough, because he was the one who got in touch. I think I did. This came up in conversation recently for those who listen at home. I think there was 12 Chelsea interviews. There was one Hampton and there was one Tatton. And I was asked why was there only one Tatton. I said only one person got in touch, which leads me to ask, maybe you better would know the question. Is it that the people who do Chelsea are pros at PR? Or is it that that maybe, not being disrespectful in any way, but maybe others don't? I'm unsure. I'm just the microphone holder and I don't mind essentially who I talk to an extent.
I guess there might be something in that. I think there's also something probably about confidence and imposter syndrome that some people think, oh, it's not, I've got anything interesting to say, it's not for me. Whereas people who are at Chelsea, you know, a lot of them just have, I was going to say, so much self-belief, perhaps too much self-belief sometimes, that I'm worth listening to, talk to me, you know. So maybe there is something about that.
Is there a bit of... I wasn't the greatest always at knocking on doors, and I'm probably still not. I think I'm good at ending up talking to people, but I think somebody said this to me inside this morning, and I said, no, Irishmen always end up, you know, forgetting that they walked to the cinema with the... Or the pictures, as my dad... That's what my dad... Yeah, the pictures, my dad used to call it that. You know, they went with the woman to get the... I don't know, what was the time I got distracted by a cake shop and forgot about the girl I was with, and I turned around and she was gone and we've never seen each other since, but let's not go there. Stick with me on Bowls & Wire. How long is it? What do you do? And I get, this is not a cliched question, but what's the difference between you and, let's say, another?
Okay, so there's about four questions in there. So the first one, how long is since 1992 I set up as John Wire and then Chris Bowles joined me in 1993, although we had actually worked together since the mid-1980s. And listeners, you can't see that I have a face for radio here. That I'm probably older than I sound. Anyway, I suppose why we're different is because we are difficult to pin down. We're sort of squishy company. So we do landscape architecture and some master planning. We do the occasional landscape visual impact analysis, but we also do a lot of garden design. And then we have a whole load of guys working out on site who are directly employed by us, building the projects that we design. And then we have a whole aftercare side as well. And we also do roof gardens and special projects and stuff like that. So it's a bit of an octopus, really. Lots of wriggly tentacles doing different things.
I, well, you listeners probably have heard me say this before, maybe, but Mom, yeah, you have. But Mom used to say, you know, why can't you sit still for even 2 minutes? Are you one of them who goes, no, we've done a swimming pool, let's do a cantilevered garden? Are you a bit like that? Is there an impatience maybe in you in what you do and what you draw and then make real?
No, absolutely not, actually. Quite the reverse. We're very focused, and we have, we're very focused on the sort of work we do and the sort of clients that we work for. And it's really because those sort of clients have different projects, and we feel that we can deliver what we do across different areas. But we are actually very focused about what we take on and what we don't take on. And we do, if a project really excites us, we really go for it. But we also turn quite a lot of work away as well, actually, because what we're really concerned about is quality, quality of delivery, quality of design, and that's really what we've made our name in. So it's not about the next shiny thing. Although I think some of the people who work with me would say that I'm sometimes about the next shiny thing.
Well, let's talk about shiny things then, and I don't think I've ever spoke about this. If I'm at a Chelsea show, well, then fair enough, then shiny things are, I won't say taken for granted, but they're thereabouts normally. Have you done the...
No, one of the things, Bolsonaro have built loads of show gardens, dozens, but I have never designed a show garden at Chelsea or Hampton, no.
Why?
Well, to start with, we couldn't agree in the early days of the business, we couldn't agree on whether we were going to do it or not, so that is, one of us wanted to do it, one of us didn't want to do it, but then when the business became more established, we were really busy and we were getting some fantastic projects, and it's almost as though we didn't need to. We certainly didn't need to from a business point of view, and we still don't need to from a business point of view. We get fantastic work and we're really, really busy, but I suppose really the only reason that most people do a show garden at Chelsea is vanity, actually. And so if I was to do one, I mean, you can dress it up with all sorts of good business reasons, but in the end it's vanity. And so I would like to do a show garden at Chelsea, and I will do one actually soon, but the reason that I'm going to be doing it is vanity. At least I'm being honest about it.
Is that a bit like saying I'm going to use Betcha Jackie Monteoy because it reminds me of peace, and you're going, you're using it because it does exactly what it's told?
yeah, a bit like that. Now, what project did you have in mind when you said that, Peter?
Well, I actually had my own when I was speaking at the landscape show some weeks ago, and one of the questions from the audience, Andrew Fisher-Tomlin, I should give a high five to him, you're going to hear his name a bit over the next while, we'll get on to him in a minute. The girl said, what type of trees are you using? This is the project in France in the base of the castle in Perone. I remember in my head, at least, that there was a little bit of a smile from one of the members of the audience, and then I said, I'm going to use one that I never wanted to use, which was because it reminds me of what architects would design into buildings when they believe they're the landscape architect.
Well, that's because they have light foliage, you can see the building through it. That's the main reason. Yeah. They look good on elevation drawings as well, so.
Yeah. I don't know, I get it, but I think when every drawing that I've had from the same building architect has books of Semper Fire and box hedging and only Jackie Monteoy, then you have to turn around and go, oh, hold on a second, can we not have soup today? You know, maybe there's something a little bit wrong. Let's sidetrack away from things that do what they're told, and that wasn't a segue in any way. But when you talk about not doing show gardens, one of the things I admired you for, and it is Andrew Fisher-Tomlin is the catalyst for this, and my initial reason to want to talk to you was because Bowls and Wire, can I say, encourage Max Harriman, former guest of The Sod Show, do go back and listen to that one, because as far as I'm concerned, it's a corker. But you as a company encouraged the young buck, if I'm allowed to call him that, to go and make a name for himself. Why do you do that? Because normally people would say, no, hide him, he's genius, but hide him, or I'm not saying normally, but I'm, you know.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying. And I think I view it in a different way. I mean, I think that, firstly, you know, Max is a really interesting, really talented designer, and you know, I'm really glad that he wants to work with us. But I see it also that he gains a lot from working with us, in terms of we were able to bring him a bigger stage to stand on, and you know, a microphone instead of shouting effectively. More people heard what he had to say, and I think that's really good. And at the same time, that's a van going past, just in case you really didn't believe we were in a car park. at the same time, we obviously gained from his exposure. So the analogy that I would use is like a football team. So football teams, you know, if Barcelona have Messi or, you know, whoever, that they have a team and they have individuals that play for the team, and they will promote the team, and the team uses their platform as well, and they bring supporters to it. And that's sort of how I see it.
Let me give a short synopsis of the Sideshow so far, which has been all of the reasons in which we are now sitting together a couple of years after we first met. I meet you in St. Pancras with Butterworth. We sit down and we have a beer. I meet you at the Landscape Show. We essentially sit down and we have a beer. I get talking to Max Harriman. I think he was London College of Garden Design. I've got the nod of approval on that, which is Andrews College, and ends up at Tatton. And I then speak to Fisher Tomlin, who says, you got to talk to this guy I know, John Wire. And I go, I know John. He says, how do you know John? And I just press repeat on everything that I've just said. You seem to have a very inclusive group hug family ethos about you, where everybody around you that I've met, and that's just four dates off the top of my head, seems to buy into that and go, it's John, it's going to be a good night. Or as somebody said to me, Peter, I could leave you in a car park with a tray of eggs and a pound of sausages, and everybody would still walk away saying, that was a good time. We enjoyed it. Does that make sense for you, John?
Yeah. I think that does make sense. I mean, I do, you know, I enjoy life. I love my job. I love, you know, love getting out on my bike. I love getting in the garden. I love cooking. I love eating. I love drinking. You know, I like living. And I hope that some of that rubs off on people around me. And at Bowls and Wire, I hate saying that, but at Bowls and Wire, we do have, that's our sort of philosophy of enjoyment and support of each other, promotion of each other. And so we have a rule that we apply when we get a new inquiry in. So we ask these three questions, and it has to be in this order. Will it be fun? Will it further my name? Will it make money? And we have to get two out of three. So you can do a job that will be fun and will further our name, but it doesn't make money. That's fine. You can do some of those. You can do a job that will be fun and will make money. Nobody gets to hear about it. You sign NDAs, can't go on the website. That's all fine. You get jobs where, anyway, you get the idea, but you can't do a job that just makes money. You can't do a job that is just fun. It's got to work within that. Beyond that, we also have a very strong sense of who we are, what our values are, and that we've all bought into, you know, of sort of creativity and trust and mutual support as well. So
we were speaking yesterday, not me and you, me and Andrew, and we were talking about probably one of the three things that you mentioned in the list. It's never the destination, it's always the journey to you go there. We were talking about show gardens and gardens that I've worked on abroad, but I didn't make money on them, but they were just ones that you couldn't turn down. It's like getting a phone call saying, would you go for coffee with Keith Richards? Of course you would.
Yeah.
If you analyse that with your accountant, you've paid for a plane fare and a taxi, and now you're out of pocket, so you've got minus negative in one column. But it's still coffee with Keith Richards. You can't turn that down.
Yeah. I think that's right. And there are projects that I've done that are like that. Not with Keith Richards, but with some other people. they're just gold in my head that have just been brilliant. Yeah. Magic moments, yeah. I did years ago, and I'm going to have to name drop now because it's just such a fantastic story, and it was a brilliant project to have been involved with, but I did Freddie Mercury's garden.
No freaking way.
Yeah, and we worked on it for ages, and Freddie was up and down and up and down. It was only about 2 years before he died. His mood would sometimes be up and sometimes down, and we'd have, you know, conversations about this. Lots and lots of other people around him. It was quite difficult sometimes to deal with him, and it obviously depends how he felt. But I went around there one day to have a meeting, and he just pulled me in answer the door himself, which is unusual. There's nobody else there. And we just sat and we watched. He was reviewing a video of their world tour, and it was all cut together, and it was the final review before it got issued. And he kept stopping it and telling me all these stories behind it. And I was there 2.5 hours, and at the end he said, "So what did you come round for?" It was great, you know.
I have to try and keep this on track because I'm a big, decent music fan. And so I need to be careful I don't segue off Garden Show. But I'll talk to you about it after with a beer. Where was I gone? Yeah, we're back here again, folks. I'm really sorry. Yes, we spoke before we came on air. And the question I asked you was, have you done gardens that are a little bit different, odd, as in entirely odd? And you went, "Oh yeah, I got one." And I went, "Oh no." And then I had to stop you in case you told me, and then I wouldn't get the same thing. So where were we heading on that one?
So I did a garden in the Rockies 4 years ago, and I got this email which said, help, we need help, we need landscape help, please come and help us. And it was a 10 acre plot, but actually the garden was only going to cover probably a quarter of that, I guess. But when I started looking at this, there was no soil, and the winter temperatures get down to minus 20, minus 25, metre and a half of snow, and then it melts and all the flowers come up, and then the temperatures go up to 35 degrees and you get absolutely no rain. And it was at quite a high altitude, and they had to bore down 1,100 feet to get any water through granite. So they said, "So we haven't got that much left for the garden because we spent quite a lot of it on the borehole." Unusual in many ways. They actually wanted to build it themselves. So they got one or two bits done by contractors, but they actually built it themselves, so with their own hands. One of them did. So one of them earned a lot of money, and the other one built it herself with her hands. It's on our website, you can look it up. It won a bunch of awards, and it's a really unusual project.
Got three conversations running in my head. Haha, I know, I can hear you giggling at home, and even I'm giggling now. But one of the conversations was, what's a normal X garden? One. Number two was a conversation about a business that went out of business. And the answer to it was, well, they just did the same thing repeatedly over and over. They never changed. They never evolved. In my head, that's a tricky grapple of having a signature thing in where somebody knows it's yours, not suggesting they've gone stale. And the third part of that is, in my head, I can't do the same thing anyway, because we're back to that Peter can sit still thing. Maybe the thing in my head is, how do you keep fresh all of the time as a business that is on the go since 1992, which means you're extremely clever, and there's a reason why I've asked you to talk to me, irrespective of who suggests that. I have a good respect for you, John.
How do you keep it fresh? I think that is a really good question, actually, Peter. We set aside quite a chunk of our time to just looking into stuff. I pay for all our designers to go to the SGD conference twice a year. They want to go off to see something, go to some conference, go to some show. Two people went over to Maison et Objet in Paris earlier this year, and I went over with somebody on with my wife, who also works for us, somebody, she'll hate me calling her somebody, and we just try and stay ahead all the time. And also I think that you just have to not have your head down, but look around all the time. Inspiration comes always from where you don't expect it.
Are there things that frustrate you, John? I don't, it's S Club 7 stuff, if you want to, not although somebody know that Steps are apparently back on tour again. I nearly fell out my stool, but if you understand me, and it's not T-Rex, it's not Mark Bolan, there's no revelation, yeah, about it. Holy pants, there's a guy in a white suit on stage shaking his hips. Adults are saying, "Oh, them young people."
So what's the question, Peter?
What is the question? Are there things that get in your nerves in the
right, yeah, I remember now, sorry. Yeah, there are things that get on my nerves, and you're right, actually, that formulaic stuff, you know, stuff that lacks freshness, stuff that is just repeat, that does get on my nerves. Although I understand why it happens. I understand why people want to do it, but that's not really what we're about. We are about challenges and difficult jobs, difficult locations, coming up with solutions. Actually, I am quite impatient. I'm not wriggly, but I am quite impatient. I do get frustrated when things aren't moving quickly enough, you know. I am sort of big picture. How about this? How about that? How about the other? I probably have a trail of people in my wake picking up all the detail, going, "Yes, but what about this? What about this bit?" Which is also really important. So that comes back to the fact of not hiring people like you, recognising what your strengths are, understanding what your weaknesses are, and being good at what you do and surrounding yourself with other people who are good at what they do. And then hopefully if you had a football team made all of goalies, it would be hopeless.
This isn't the Max Hardiman nor the Andrew Fisher Tomlin Memorial podcast show in any way, but the conversations I've had, I guess spending time in Andrew's company, have mainly been about what we were talking about, which is family and who you surround yourself with and how you do things, not always for money, but if you hang around with good people, helping them out,
yeah,
you know, it goes like it's a good two-way street. The relationship between you, Max, London College of Garden Design, Andrew, is slightly unusual. And Andrew is a former guest of the show. You should go back and listen to that one. A 10-year-old college, or on the verge of being, and for you as a business since 92, what's that make it, 20-something?
26 years, yeah.
Who's established to take on a guy from a college that's 10 years old. Do you rate London College of Garden Design? Is that the right way to ask that question even?
Yeah, I do. I do rate them because we have had a number of people from there, and I know all three people behind the London College of Garden Design, and I've known them all for a long time, since before they set it up. So Andrew Fisher Tomlin was chair of the Society of Garden Designers, and when I was on council, and he suggested that I become treasurer, which was an unusual thing, but I really enjoyed it. And then I also know Mark Gregory and Andrew Wilson. I was at college with, he was in the same year as my wife. I have known Andrew Wilson for, sucks through teeth, 39 years.
Wow. Those three names that you gave, Fisher Tomlin, Andrew Wilson and Mark Gregory, are all former guests of the show. The joke.
So why has it taken so long to get me on then?
I don't know. They were paying me better money to say nice things about them, maybe. I couldn't tell you. But they're kind of like when the Bee Gees walk out on stage and you get the glow of white light behind them. Whenever I speak to Andrew, I remember walking up through Chelsea one day, I was only saying this morning, Andrew Wilson sent me a text saying, are you coming to talk to us, or are we not important enough for you anymore? And that was the day before they won their first gold. And I remember thinking in my head, you know, that's just wonderful. Have you not got better things, better people, more important people to be texting, though? But they do what you do, and it's like there's like a little group of you that, you know, we were all backstage when the Stones were playing, you know, sorry for using that analogy. But it's a nice part of the world to live in.
It's a lovely industry. This is a lovely industry. And I really it's not a clique at all, and it's a really open industry, and one of the things I really love about it is that everybody wants to help everybody else. And you know, there are some industries where things are really quite focused and almost like everybody's focused on their own bit and everybody's a competitor, and you know, it gets a bit tight and backstabby. The landscape industry really isn't like that. Everybody's chums. And actually Chelsea, you know, during build, it's just a fantastic atmosphere. Firstly, the sort of designers and contractors all muddled up together, and the contractors all lending each other bits of stuff, designers all sweating, and you know, discovering that the ideas that they had, you know, actually maybe they're not playing out quite as they thought, but everybody's there, mucks in together, and you know, cheek by jowl, and that is, in a way, Chelsea epitomises everything that is good, or the build process it epitomises everything that is good about the landscape industry, I think.
You built Max's garden at Tatton.
Yeah, we did that because the budget wasn't quite enough to go around. So I mean, we really wanted to. We really wanted to support Max. We would have done it, but it was the only way so we could swing in, you know, some extra sponsorship. Max had done fantastically well and had actually gone out and got a load of sponsorship for a load of stuff, you know, for the timber and lots of other stuff. But what I'm really glad, so I think he would have done it, he'd have got it done one way or another on his own without us. But one thing that we really were able to do that made a difference was that we got the garden relocated to Addenbrookes Hospital in Cambridge, and that is just about finished now. It's pretty much all in, and
you built that as well.
Yeah, we built that as well. Yeah, and we did that at cost for Addenbrookes, so just the cost of the materials and labour to do it with no profit and overheads, and it's, you know, it's a really nice thing to have been involved with. And that is actually the fifth courtyard that we've done with Addenbrookes there. Addenbrookes in Cambridge, yeah, they've been a really great client to work with, and you know, we love working with them. Actually,
well, I've worked on a couple of hospitals, doing gardens. I remember doing one in particular on the telly. And when I walked in, the maintenance guy, you know, with respect to him, I said that we need to get that back wall changed. And he went, oh, I just painted it. And I said, but it's industrial grey. And he went, yeah. He said, it looks good. I said, it looks good if you've got a fetish for grey paint. If you want to be inspired and live a little, you know, let's try and liven to put something that photosynthesizes in there, you know, a little bit, apart from just long patchy grass. I tend to find that the hospitals are built as hospitals should be, but they don't really take the gardens from the build. And schools have a similar thing as well, where they'll put in, you know, the white lines on the tarmac at them are absolutely amazing if you like parallel lines, but that's as far as it goes. And then they say we should have some kind of garden for the schools, or we should do something in the hospital for the grounds. It's always a bit, not always, I say not always, but it's a bit of an after.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. Actually, these days there are hospitals that are being built with more from the start, and I think there's a lot of research that and people understand the healing properties of nature. But Addenbrookes, Rachel Northfield, who's head of estates at Addenbrookes, really understands the value of landscape, and she personally has driven stuff through. And all the funding for that doesn't come out of NHS funding. They raise the funding independently of the NHS budget from various sponsors and donors and things like that. It sometimes takes a little while, but, you know, so that's been really good. And actually on schools, we do a lot of schools work as well, and that's really good. We've done some fantastic playgrounds and stuff like that, you know. So both of those are really important, I think.
I was going to ask you what was your wedding song, but I probably shouldn't in case you get into trouble. Is it a terrible one? Is it?
I can't remember. But the track, I know. But the track that we both loved was My Girl by Otis Redding. So
okay.
Is that good enough for you?
I just think if you're going to make. Run off and I was going to say something else there.
Okay, so I will tell you something. Yeah. Say, before my wife and I got married, you can do something that's a little testing in your relationship, you know, maybe something that, you know, so something that pushes the boundaries a little bit, you know, sort of try before you buy, so what we did, we cycled to China. So we set off from Westminster Bridge, and the great thing was, and this probably says more about my skills in sales than it does about my integrity, but she didn't actually want to do it. And she wanted to go to China, but she didn't want to go on a bike. She'd hardly ever been on a bike before. She thought we were going to do it in a car. Anyway, it only took 11 months, so that was fine. And then we got married afterwards.
I was about to say, if you're about to walk off into the sunset like a Telman, not a Telman Louise, it's just a terrible film. I'll take that entirely again and I won't edit it. But I think if you're going to run away with the person of your dreams and Otis is playing in the background, I think that's a pretty good place to go. John Meyer, it's always a pleasure. You've always a smile and I genuinely mean it. Thank you so much.
Okay, my pleasure. I've really enjoyed it.
I shouldn't say that, should I? But if people want to get in touch, you're on the Twitters and the webs, aren't you?
Yeah, at @wirejohn and @wire.john on Instagram. And also I do a blog which is on the Bowls and Wire website. If you just put John Wire blog into Google, it comes up. And I update that at least every month. And there's loads on there, all sorts of different stuff. So go take a look.
Excellent. For you listening at home, appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening. And drop us a note if you need to at Sudshow on Twitter, facebook.com/Sudshow, Sudshow.com. Take care. Bye bye. It's so much love.